This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, we've got my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
Hey, good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing out there? It's beautiful out there. We're almost to mid-November now.
So we got some breaking news straight from the Evo recording studio. Evo Radio has been such a big hit that we're going to be launching Evo Radio TV. So there's going to be an Evo Radio YouTube station. It's already up. So if you go on YouTube and you search Evolutionary Radio, you can find our YouTube channel. Right now, there's no videos. I have the first video recorded. I just haven't had a chance to edit and upload it yet, but probably get that done tonight. So by the time everyone's listening to this episode, there will be one video up. I'm going to try to do at least one video per week. And my goal with these videos is to take complicated scientific topics and explain them in layman's terms in a really easy to comprehend way. So the first video, it's on why a PPAR agonist, in particular Carterin, is not a SARM. So this is a topic there's a lot of misinformation on. You know, a lot of people assume Carterin is a SARM because it's sold as a SARM, but Carterin is a PPAR agonist. It's a completely different thing. It's like comparing apples to oranges. So I don't want to spoil it. These videos are going to be about 8 to 10 minutes. Very informative, kind of like short and to the point. So hopefully you guys like the videos. And again, like, I'm recording these videos for you guys. So if there's any topics you want me to talk about, if you have any improvements, any tips, suggestions, comments, if you love the video, if you hate the video, I mean, let me know. Steve, what are your thoughts?
So there is a video up. It was up.
No. There's a video recorded. I haven't edited and uploaded it yet, but I'm going to do that tonight. So by the time this podcast is up on iTunes, it should be on the YouTube channel.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Adobe Premiere is?
Adobe Premiere. It's some type of software.
It's like a professional video editing software. So I bought myself a subscription to that. So I'm teaching myself how to use it.
Okay.
It's pretty complicated, but it's pretty amazing. Like, you can do some pretty cool things with it.
Yeah, I'll let you stick to that stuff, your generation.
I'm literally staying up to like 3 a.m. on YouTube watching like how to use Adobe Premiere YouTube videos.
I can't. I'd rather just hire some young guy to take care of all that shit.
The thing is, though, is like, I could just hire someone to edit the videos, but they're never going to do it the exact way you want.
Yeah. Or have them then teach you how to do it, but that's pretty much what you're doing. You got to learn how to do it, then you can do it. That's how I've always learned. I don't need someone to do things for me. I just need them to show me how to do it like once or twice, and then I'll be able to do it from then on.
And then also my goal is like, if I know how to edit the videos myself, I have the recording studio in my condo, right? So it's like, I can record a video, upload it on my computer, edit it, upload it straight to YouTube. I can do it all myself. I don't need to rely on anyone, right? And that's just that's the type of person I am. Like, I hate waiting on people, you know? Like, I hate having a video and then just, like, sending it to someone to edit and then waiting, you know, like 20 or 30 or however long to get a reply. And then it's just, I'd rather just do it all myself. So one more thing, then we'll get into our next topic. So after that Mike Arnold episode, I've been doing a lot of research on nootropics. Okay, they're not expensive at all. I've never used any of Mike Arnold's products, but they seem very overpriced because I was doing a lot of research on nootropics, and like a very effective nootropic stack would be piracetam. I think that's how you say it, piracetam, plus choline. And I mean, you can buy 60 tablets of piracetam for like $12, and then a kilogram of choline is like $10. So I mean, that would last you 2 months, and that'd be like $25. So it seems like people are making a killing on kind of making these like enotropic stacks that are done for you. But based on the research I've done, and I'm no expert, so don't like consider me an expert or anything, but a very, very simple yet effective enotropic stack would just be paracetam and choline. Did you do any more research after the show with Mike Arnold?
Not really, Trevor. I'm not really interested in that type of thing. I know that's something with your generation. Your generation is like on every drug under the sun, and you guys take, like, you guys, like, for some reason are incapable of focusing. I think it has a lot to do with the technology and stuff, but I don't need any of that shit. Like, you know, it's not really going to make a difference in my life. So no, I mean, but I mean, all power to you if that's what you want. I mean,
so piracetam is spelled P-I-R-A-C-E-T-A-M, piracetam. And it's legal to buy. It's kind of like that gray area of supplementation. It's kind of like SARMs, but it is legal to purchase. And I checked, you can import it into Canada legally. So I don't know, Steve, don't you ever have days where like you would like something to help you focus, or do you kind of just like suck it up?
Yeah, I suck it up. I mean, yeah, I have days like that all the time, but you just suck it up. I mean, like, it's normal to have days like that as a human being. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, why is it that people always have to be, you know, on a high, like 24/7? It's just like, it's totally normal to come down. Like, I went fishing today for hours and I caught tons of fish. And yeah, my back hurts right now, but it doesn't mean I ran and took a bunch of Tylenol. I mean, I'll be fine. I mean,
I don't know. I guess my society is that like live fast, die young society.
It's okay. I mean,
the reason I want it is like I'm in academia, right? So like when you have to read through like an 80-page study and go through like all the materials and methods and like all the statistical analysis, like it's just so dry. So having something that can help you focus really helps, because otherwise you're kind of just like, you read like a page, then you kind of like have to reread it because you didn't absorb it just because it's so dry. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like you read it, but like you don't absorb it. Does that make sense?
That's something that, I mean, like I said, it's completely normal, man. I mean, some days I just daydream and, you know, I'm just not there. So the focusing issue, it's hard, man. I mean, college is hard. That's why very few people graduate college. They drop out, especially guys, because no one wants to sit there in a class for 90 minutes and hear a professor talk about inert gases for 90 minutes. So, I mean, it's just, that's just the way it is, man. You gotta deal with it in life. You're going to have to deal with that in a job one day. You're going to have someone giving a presentation in a boardroom and they're going to be, you're going to be bored out of your mind. So what? You're telling me you're not going to be able to handle that? I mean, you have to.
I do a lot of public speaking. One thing that's so important about public speaking is your body language and how you're standing and things like that, because only 25% of that people in the room are actually listening to what you're saying. So it's more how you say it than what you actually say, because a lot of people are kind of like tuned out, not even listening. But anyways, we'll get into our next topic. Because the first Evo video is on Carterin and SARMs, I thought a really good topic would be SARMs stacks. So I'm going to talk about one of my favorite stacks, and then I'll let Steve talk about one of his favorite stacks. So the nice thing about SARMs is that because they don't aromatize into estrogen, they don't convert to DHT, they don't raise prolactin levels in the body, there's no issues with stacking different SARMs. I mean, you can really stack any SARMs together. It's not like steroids where there's certain steroids you wouldn't really want to stack together because, you know, you might have issues with them. So the nice thing about SARMs is that you can really stack any of them together. One very common SARMs stack is the triple stack, which is Carterin, S4, and Osterin. Now, that's one of the most popular stacks. And it's a stack you could really use for bulking or cutting. Like, it's kind of like a recomposition stack. So Carterin is a really good stack for endurance and fat loss. S4 is a really good stack for strength. And then Osterin is a really good stack for recovery. a really good SARM for recovery. So when you stack those three SARMs, you get the best of everything, really. You get, you know, good fat loss, good endurance, good strength, and good recovery. So that's the reason why you hear about the triple stack so much, and that's the reason why the triple stack is so commonly recommended. I say it's probably the most common SARM stack. What would you say, Steve?
Whatever you do, and again, carterine isn't a SARM, but I think carterine should be the base of any SARM stack, because carterine gives you tremendous endurance boost, tremendous, and also helps cut fat. And there's nothing like it out there. And if you listen to our last podcast, I explained the way stimulants work and the way carterine works. And carterine works the opposite of stimulants. So when you take carterine, you're not revving up your engine. You're actually slowing your engine down and allowing yourself to push harder and longer without getting winded.
Steve, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. What about someone whose goal is just size and strength? They don't care about fat loss. They don't care about cardio endurance. Would you still recommend carterine to be included in their stack?
When a powerlifter is lifting heavy ass weight, when they train, they'll usually train in a 3, 4, 5 rep range, okay, during training. And then when they're actually maxing out, they'll usually max out 2, 3 rep range. And then for actual powerlifting meet, they'll obviously max out 1 rep. So when you do those heavy ass weights for small reps, your heart rate still spikes. So carterine would still help you, especially in your training, because when you're training as a powerlifter, your heart rate still increases. And if you don't believe me, strap a heart rate monitor to yourself when you're lifting heavy ass weight and see what happens. Like, look at wrestlers. You ever watch wrestlers when they wrestle? They pick a guy up, throw him, pick a guy up, throw him. And then they'll kind of, the other guy will kind of take control of the match and then pick him up and throw him, pick him. They're resting in between their reps, but you don't, you know, they kind of make a show out of it. But one guy is resting while the other guy is doing the lifting. Then they switch. One guy lifts, the other guy rests.
Another benefit that a lot of people don't talk about is that carterine lowers your heart rate, exactly like you said, right? So if you're getting ready for a lift, you know, if you're at a powerlifting meet, naturally your adrenaline is going to be through the roof. Your heart rate's going to be through the roof, you know, because you've been preparing for this for months, maybe years, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the Super Bowl for you, right? So naturally your heart rate is going to be very, very high just because you've got all that adrenaline pumping and everything. So if you take carterine before your lift, it's going to lower your heart rate. It's going to help you perform better. So that's another real benefit of carterine. What I would recommend, and what I recommend for a lot of my clients, is actually use SR9009 instead of carterine, because they can use it as a pre-workout. So, I mean, if I have someone who's super lean, their goal is not fat loss, they don't care about fat loss, I'll still say, hey, using something like SR9009 before your workout would be an awesome idea. Not for the fat loss benefits, but for the endurance benefits. You know, it's almost like a pre-workout you would take. So it'll help you train better. It'll help reduce fatigue. It'll help improve cardio. It'll help improve endurance. It's going to allow you to train longer and harder. So even though you don't care about the fat loss benefits, it's going to help indirectly build muscle size and strength because your workouts will be better.
I think LGD is a tremendous SARM. Out of all the SARMs, I would say that one is like a bread and butter one that you can kind of use as a base. So something like LGD and carterine together, nothing wrong with that. It'll do the job. I mean, but aside from the triple stack is a tremendous stack. But if you want to save money and you want maximum benefits, something like LGD and carterine together, you could bulk on it, you can cut on it, you can get stronger on it, you can get endurance on it. A CrossFit athlete would love it. An endurance athlete would love it. A powerlifter would love it. A bodybuilder would love it. Across the board, you know, whether you're a gym rat or whatever, it works really well. a cutting stack with the S4 and cartering. Those two work really well in conjunction with exercise and being in a caloric deficit. You will shred up on that stack. The problem I have with S4 is the vision sides. And I do get them at 50 milligrams a day. I get them. It's really weird because you'll go from one room to another, one lit room to a non-lit room. You'll wake up middle of the night to take a leak and you'll be like, whoa, I can't see in the dark. It's really funky. It's nothing permanent, but what happens is that it's connecting with your androgen receptors in your eyes. So that's causing that vision effect. So when you stop.
Basically what happens is the S4 molecule binds to the retina in your eyeballs, which causes you to see a yellow tint. It's almost like when you're in a dark room and you turn on a bright light and you kind of have that like weird feeling where your eyes adjust. It's kind of like that. You know, it's not overly serious. And one thing I want to point out is that vision side effect, although it does occur and it might be a little bit annoying, it's not serious because as soon as you stop the S4, it'll go away. So it's not like it's going to be like a long-term side effect or anything like that. Because I see a lot of people on the forums, you know, they're freaking out. They're like, oh my goodness, I'm taking S4 and I'm getting this vision side effect. I'm like, relax. If you stop taking the S4, it'll go away in 3 or 4 days. So it's nothing serious. It's nothing permanent. So even if you do get the side effect, it might be a little bit annoying, but it's not going to cause any long-term damage.
I will say this, and I talked to someone else about this. There is a benefit to that. And that is if you're sensitive to light, you will actually notice you're able to sleep in when you're on S4. Because I'm a person, any light wakes me up in the morning. Any fucking light. So it's like when I was on S4, I actually was able to sleep in longer. So oddly enough, it actually benefited me because I was able to rest longer. And that's like gold. If you get an extra 15 or 30 minutes of sleep, that's gold in fitness. So
that's one thing I want to ask your thoughts on, Steve, is people often compare LGD to S4. What are your thoughts on the two, and which would you say is better for each, like what is LGD better for and what is S4 better for?
I mean, they're both SARMs. They're classic SARMs. Know that about it. It's not like Nutrabol or Cartarine SR9009 or where they're not really SARMs. So S4, basically the side effects with S4 to look for are the vision side effects, as we know. The side effects from LGD to look for is that it's suppressive. Not as suppressive as anabolic steroids, but it is one of the more suppressive of the main SARMs that we talk about, which are Osterine, S4, which is Androine, and then the LGD. Those are the three main SARMs, the classic three SARMs. RAD 140 is more suppressive than LGD, but it's not something that's wildly popular yet. So out of those three SARMs that I mentioned, the LGD, the S4, and the Osterine, LGD is the most suppressive. So it is the most powerful. Strength, size, you're going to look for that. I've gotten strong on S4 personally. So it's going to work for that too. But, you know, I would say, you know, they're interchangeable. It's just about those two side effects on each, the vision sides versus the suppression. So that is something that's a disadvantage of both. So I'd make a decision. I really think on both, you can accomplish a lot of your goals on both. They're interchangeable aside from the side effects.
So a couple of things with the vision side effect. One way you can help reduce the side effect is split up your S4 dosage. So instead of the recommended dosage of S4 is 50 milligrams. So instead of taking all 50 milligrams at once, if you take 25 milligrams in the morning and then 25 milligrams later in the day, that'll help reduce that side effect. Another thing you can do is you can just take the S4 on workout days. You could take it basically 5 days a week. That'll help reduce the side effect. A really good stack for recovery, so let's say you had an injury or something like that, would be Nutrabol and Osterine. So Osterine was developed to increase healing, prevent muscle loss in people with muscle wasting diseases like HIV, cancer. It's really, really good for recovery. And then Nutribol is an HGH analog. It basically signals the pituitary gland to increase HGH output. It's basically the same thing as taking HGH. The only difference is when you take HGH, you're injecting exogenous HGH, where Nutribol, it's your body itself producing higher levels of HGH than it normally would. So that's a really good recovery stack. RAD 140, that's a very interesting SARM. It was basically developed to replace testosterone replacement therapy in older men. That's what it was. The only thing about RAD 140 is it is androgenic. So there's a misconception. You know, a lot of people think that SARMs are completely anabolic substances. That's actually technically not true. SARMs do have some androgenic properties and they do bind to the androgen receptor, but their androgenic properties are so small, it's insignificant. That's true for all the SARMs except RAD 140. RAD 140 does have some androgenic properties to it, but the androgenic properties are 1/10 that of testosterone. So again, it's very, very low androgenic, but it does have some androgenic properties. I've had females use it and they had no side effects, no emasculating side effects. I really don't think the small amount of androgenic side effects are going to be an issue, but just take that into consideration that RAD 140 does have a small amount of androgenic properties to it. Steve, do you have anything else to add into SARMs before we move into our next topic?
Well, I just want to say a lot of people say, why would you use SARMs when there's steroids out there? And my simple answer is SARMs, first of all, have healing properties. Steroids do not. SARMs can increase your endurance. Steroids do not, aside from EQ. Steroids are extremely suppressive and can be extremely androgenic. SARMs are not. Steroids cannot be used during PCT or bridge. SARMs can when used properly. So there are advantages to using SARMs. And it's a concept that certain people just can't seem to grasp for some reason. But I think that has a lot to do with people just want to use steroids year round at moderate or high dosages, you know, in those situations. But for those of us, which is most of us, believe it or not, who want to be safe and want to be healthy in fitness, SARMs are superior to anabolic steroids in that respect. If you were to run 2 or 3 cycles of SARMs a year, your blood work would be substantially healthier. Your reproductive blood work, your HPTA, and your organ health would be substantially healthier than using 2-3 cycles of anabolic steroids a year. I'm just telling you the truth, you know. But anabolic steroids have the advantages that they're going to get you way stronger. They're going to be more androgenic. Your libido is probably going to, you know, go sky high on them when you're on them. So there are advantages to anabolic steroids. But for those who want to bash SARMs, like I just said, SARMs do have the advantages over anabolic steroids in certain ways.
Our next topic is a relationship topic, and that's long-distance relationships. Steve, have you ever been in a long-distance relationship?
Yes. Yes, I have. The longest one was a 6.5-hour drive. So basically, we were living 20 minutes away, and she took a job 6.5 hours away. And, you know, we made the decision that we would keep dating. And basically, she'd come and see me once a month, once every 2 months. And I'd go see her once a month, once every 2 months. So we'd kind of, you know, drive back and forth to each other during that span.
So you're obviously not dating her anymore. What happened? Was it the distance, or did you guys break up for a different reason?
No, we ended up moving closer together again after that. So the long-distance relationship, when you're in a long-distance relationship, it's very interesting because, you know, you're able to talk on the phone. You can talk through, you know, do the webcam thing through Skype and stuff like that. But the thing is, like, it's a question of, you know, can you handle not seeing that person? for that long a time. That's the issue. But then when you do see them, it's like, whoa, it's like you missed each other so much type of thing. That's why salesmen who are like out of town for 2 weeks and home for a week, out of town for 2 weeks, their marriages tend to be more successful, because the more time you spend, if you're seeing that person every day, you tend to get annoyed with each other. And when you don't, so it was kind of interesting because we never fought during that time or anything. So it was very, very easy, clear sailing. The danger about a long-distance relationship is that the cheating, the temptation to cheat, the temptation to meet other people and be like, look, you know, she's so far away or he's so far away, he'll never know because we live in totally different cities. So if I do something, you know, they're not going to know. So that's, it's a temptation thing. Are you willing to not be tempted? Are you staying busy enough where, you know, you're okay seeing that person once a month or once every 2 months? So yeah, it can definitely work. But I don't see it being sustainable long-term. I think it can work temporarily while you guys are away from each other.
Interesting. It's something I don't have much experience with. I was just wondering to get your thoughts on it, because you hear people who automatically say, you know, long distance relationships don't work. They kind of just automatically don't even give it a try. And then also there's like all these famous love stories, you know, where, you know, someone's deployed in the army or something and they don't see their girlfriend for 3 years and they come back. And as soon as they come back, like they get married and they live happily ever after or something like
that. Wait a minute. For 3 years?
I'm talking like romance movies, Steve.
Yeah, but I'm saying in real life, in that situation, you would still like have vacations and stuff if you're deployed overseas and stuff.
It's a movie, Steve. Don't take it too seriously.
I'm trying to like apply it to real life. But I actually had a friend who was deployed like that, and he would, during his vacations, he'd like go to Vegas. Now he would even go see his girlfriend. So it's all about, you know, are you, you know, respectful to the other person, where you would on your, when you do get time off, are you going to spend it with that person, or are you going to go to Vegas and party and get strippers and shit? You know, so yes, my answer is yes. There's nothing wrong with long-distance relationships. As long as you're both on your time off, you both can take time off at the same time and then you agree to spend it together. You know, are you willing to do that? And that's the question. But don't enter into a long-distance relationship without the understanding that one day you guys will be living in the same city or together. Like, if it's hopeless, like if you're a Canadian, Trevor, and you meet an American girl and, you know, someone's got to move to another country to be together, right? So it's like, that's a big deal. So you got to compromise on that. Either she's got to move to Canada and be a Canadian citizen, or you've got to move to the United States and become an American citizen if you end up together and married.
Or the compromise could be like, we both move to Europe.
Or you move on to the border, you know?
Yeah.
It's where you're like, just cross the border. You're a few miles away from the border and just cross it to see each other. But yeah, eventually you're going to have to compromise. There has to be a long-term plan to that, so you don't waste each other's time, you know? So that's the thing. So I would say,
gotcha. So yeah. Basically Steve's dating advice is like, long-term relationships can work, but they need to be temporary. It can't be a long-term solution.
Exactly. And then the military thing also, like, keep in mind, if someone's in the military or they ain't in long distance, every 3 years, they're going to move to a different place. So are you willing to take that chance where they can move to Washington, D.C. for 3 years? Then they can move to a different country for 3 years, to Germany. Are you willing to travel with them every 3 years? That's a tough situation. And that, not just in the military, but it's also if you're working for the government, if you're with any type of job that requires you to travel around the world, that's a little bit selfish on your part to drag someone along like that, where you expect them to move to different countries. And I've had friends that have done that, and it has not turned out well, because the person's like, I'm not moving to fucking Romania with you. I'm not moving to fucking Africa with you. What am I, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to work? You know, I'm going to uproot my life just to be with you. I don't think so. So it's a selfishness thing on a person's part. You got to check, you know, is your career more important than being with that person? That's what you got to think about if you're that person who has to move a lot.
Steve, did you know I got a listener email asking if you had a psychology degree?
It's funny though, because I've never like taken any psychology classes or something, but yes, I can be very, I'm very good when it comes to that type of shit. So yes.
Coming soon to Evo Radio TV episodes of Dr. Steve. Okay. Anyways, our next topic, for whatever reason, I've been getting a lot of questions, a lot of email questions about dried fruit and nuts on a fat loss diet. And not just dried fruit and nuts, but also these like natural bars. Like, do you know what Laura bars are, Steve?
Yes.
Yeah. So like Laura bar is kind of like, it'll have like dried fruit and nuts.
Yeah.
And you read the label, you know, it says natural, nothing artificial, no artificial sweeteners, anything like that. The problem with dried fruit and nuts is that they're healthy foods, don't get me wrong, but they're very, very calorie dense. I mean, if you look at that Laura bar, it's going to have around 300 calories, and it's a pretty small bar. It's not very satiating. You know, same with almonds, right? A cup of almonds is around 500 to 600 calories. And I mean, you can eat that cup of almonds in like 2 minutes without even realizing it. Same with dried fruit. Dried fruit has all the water removed. So I mean, the amount of dried fruit you can eat would be like a tenth to the amount of whole fruit, right? It's kind of like apple chips. Like for every 3 apple chips, you could eat a whole apple, right? So, I mean, you could eat a bag of apple chips and not feel full at all. But if you ate 10 apples, you'd feel really, really full. So it's not like these are bad foods, and it's not like I'm saying don't eat them. But on a fat loss diet, it's almost like you're on a budget, right? You really want to stretch your calories and make your calories last as long as possible. You know, you want to be eating low calorie, high volume foods, things like lean protein, things like vegetables, things like fruits, but I'm talking fresh fruit. I'm not talking dried fruit or fruit snacks or anything like that. I mean, like, look at something like celery. I mean, you could eat an entire stalk of celery. Like, I'm talking like one of those big stalks of celery at the grocery store, not like a single stalk, like the entire thing. And it would be like 100 calories. Or you could eat 20 almonds and it's 100 calories, right? Which is going to make you feel full. If you ate an entire thing of celery, you probably wouldn't want to eat anything for the rest of the day. You'd be so full. But you can eat 20 almonds. It's like nothing. So that's the take-home point. What are your thoughts on this, Steve?
I'm a big nut person. And it's weird because I recently got into this whole nut thing. I used to never eat them. It's cost me like a tooth in the process, but I actually eat nuts every day. And, I don't know, like, I'm curious to see if I were just to stop eating nuts, what would happen? I'm so skeptical. I know like the calories, I know the science says, okay, this is this many calories, but I'm so skeptical that by eating nuts, you're going to get fat. I'm just so skeptical. Like, I want to see real world proof that people who are fat are eating lots of nuts. That's the reason they're fat. It's not from pizza and donuts and burgers and all that stuff. I need to see some evidence of that. I'm just curious if 500 calories of almonds are going to make you fat like 500 calories from eating 2 donuts.
Like, okay, Steve, like, you're educated on this topic. You understand everything, right? So you realize, okay, I ate some nuts. That's pretty calorie dense. The rest of my day, I'm going to stick with, you know, lower calorie foods. The issue comes, you know, the average person, they don't understand this concept. So, you know, they wake up, they go to Starbucks, they have, you know, a fancy coffee that has 600 calories. For breakfast, then they have, you know, a piece of bread that's loaded with peanut butter, which has, you know, 400 calories just from the peanut butter. then, you know, for lunch, they have a small salad and they're hungry because all they had for lunch was a salad. So then, you know, they eat some dried fruit and nuts and get, you know, 500-600 calories like that. And then for dinner, they, you know, have some pizza or something, which has 1,000 calories. If you add all that up, that's like 3,500 calories and they're not exercising. So that's where the weight gain comes. But again, it's like I said, it's like they're not unhealthy foods. They're just foods you have to mindfully eat. You know, it's not like you're eating an entire bag of nuts. You're probably, you know, measuring out your portion or eating them mindfully and being conscious of how much you're eating.
I would say this is my advice, son. This is what I do. Like, I'll eat the nuts as a meal replacement. So rather than eating like an 800 calorie dinner, I'll eat 800 calories worth of nuts instead. And that will be my dinner.
See, if your goal is weight loss, instead of eating 800 calories of nuts, if you had, you know, like a 6 to 8 ounce chicken breast, that's about 150, 200 calories, a big plate of steamed broccoli, maybe 100 calories, that's only 300 calories. So there's your 500 calorie per day deficit. There's your 1 pound per week weight loss.
Right. But I'm saying if you really want those nuts, replace a meal with it. Then whatever, a couple nuts, you know, whatever that meal would have been usually. You see what I'm saying? So I'm a strategy. I do a lot of like odd things in my strategy. You guys heard these podcasts. Like, I'll do a fast like the whole day, then just eat dinner. And in that situation, I'll just have 500, 600 calories worth of nuts. Am I going to get fat eating 500-600 calories of nuts a day? If that's all I eat? No, I'm not. So it's like, you have to kind of understand what you're putting in your body and kind of just think about it. But I think, you know, I'm not quite sure though, playing devil's advocate on this topic, that you're going to get fat off eating nuts. And I would like to see some type of evidence of that. Like, even if you were to eat 3,000 calories worth of nuts every day for the next 2 months, are you going to get fat off of that?
Calories do matter. Yeah.
Nuts, even so you get
it doesn't, fat. Dude. It doesn't like if you eat more calories than you can consume, you will gain weight. Now, there's the thermic effect of food. Certain foods will raise your metabolism. There's a little bit more to it than that. It's not a black and white equation. That's why I'm saying, Steve. Yeah. There's the thermic effect of food. Certain foods will raise your metabolism. So it's a little bit more complicated than that. But in layman's terms, and the big picture of all of this is that if you eat more calories than you consume, yes, you will gain weight. Try it. Try eating 3,000 calories of nuts per day for a couple weeks and then come on this podcast and tell me I was right. I will bet you any amount of money. How much money do you want to bet, Steve?
This is what I'm going to do for the next week. I'm not going to eat any nuts or dried fruit. And I want to see, I'm going to see what happens. If I should lose weight. Absolutely. So let's see if that actually happens. I'll just go back to eating a regular dinner instead of nuts.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay.
You can come back on this podcast in 3 weeks and tell me I was right.
Yeah. Even a week. I'll know in a week.
A week's not that. Give it 2 weeks.
Okay.
Our next topic is the steroid trenbolone, and whether it's best to bulk or cut on tren. Tren is a really interesting steroid. It has an anabolic to androgenic ratio of 500 to 500. Testosterone in comparison is 100 to 100. Tren is a very, very powerful steroid. It can also be pretty harsh in the way of side effects, but I mean, it is a very effective steroid and it's nicknamed Elixir of the Gods for a reason. In my opinion, it's very versatile. You can really bulk or cut with it. So tren is a nandrolone derivative, and because of that, it doesn't aromatize into estrogen. So it doesn't really cause any water retention or bloat. So you can cut with it, but because it's so androgenic, you get crazy increases in size, strength, aggression. So it's good for bulking too. So Steve, you're the steroid guru. What are your thoughts? Tren, better for bulking or better for cutting?
I've used tren many times, and I always get bigger on it, man. I get bigger, I get stronger on it. So I'm going to have to go with bulking for me, but some guys do cut on it. So it just depends. Everyone's going to be different. So even I just like on trend, like I'll take it and 2 weeks later, I'll be up like five pounds. It like, it makes my muscles fuller. It makes me stronger. Like it's just an amazing compound. And let's remember that. Yeah. Originally it was human grade parabolin. It was originally made for bodybuilding, and then it got banned, and then it got brought back as a veterinary, as a vet steroid. And what is it used for in vet steroid? It's used as a cattle.
It's a feedlot drug.
Yeah, cattle feedlot drug. So they're not trying to make the cattle leaner. They're trying to make the cattle more bigger. So I'm going to go on. My view has always been this.
Steve, okay. In the cattle industry, they give the cattle tren, but then they also feed the cattle absolute crap and load them full of antibiotics to increase the marbling content because they were running into the issue of when they gave the cattle's tren, they were getting too muscular. So the cattle that are given Finoplex, which is basically the veterinary form of tren, they purposely also give those cattle antibiotics and make sure to feed them corn and soy so that the meat isn't too tough and there's marbling in it.
Yeah, so here's the thing with tren. Here's the interesting thing with tren. Like you said, it was very androgenic. So what's going to happen, very anabolic. It's going to have a tremendous nutrition partitioning effect on you. And in my experience, even more than insulin. So when you take it and you eat something, that food like kind of gets shuttled right into the muscles and feeds your muscles. I really think the glycogen effect of tren causes
glycogen.
Your muscle.
Glycogen.
Huh? What'd I say?
You said glycogen. It's called glycogen.
Okay. But
for our listeners, glycogen is basically just glucose stored inside of your muscles.
So here's the thing, like that is the effect of feel being more full. But when you come off a tren, the opposite effect happens. It's no longer in your system. So you have a big boomerang effect. Guys will get really, really strong on tren. And then when you come off, it's like your strength will nosedive and your muscle fullness will get really big when you're on it. And then when you come off, your muscles seem to shrink a lot. That's for that reason.
Okay, so Steve, what would you stack trend with for bulking and what would you stack trend with for cutting? Let's summarize those, then we'll go into our last topic.
Okay, like I would never use trend to cut. And I know that's everyone's going to say that's wrong, whatever. I don't care. That's my opinion. Do not use trend for cut to cut. Now for bulking and to get stronger, I would go with a mild, stack it with something mild. Anavar, T-Bowl, Primo, any of those, something mild, and just use a little bit of tren with it, and that will have give you a tremendous boost with limited side effects. I'm all about cutting down on the side effects. So I would stack a mild anabolic with tren, and you'll have sensational results with minimal side effects. I'm not a fan of stacking testosterone, Anadrol, D-Bowl, Halo, Super Droll, all those androgenic compounds with tren, because now you're doubling and tripling the side effects. And I want to use the steroids to give me an advantage in the weight room, not use steroids to make me feel like shit where I can't sleep at night, where I'm hot all the time, where I'm dehydrated, where I have no energy. Then what's the point of using steroids? I want to be free. I want to kick ass in the gym. So that's the way I like to use my trend when I do use trend, but my goals right now aren't strength and bulking. So I haven't touched trend in a while. Eventually I'll go back to using trend when those are my goals. But for cutting, I would not use any steroid for cutting at all.
Okay. I'm gonna say two more things about trend and then we'll move into our last topic. So I'm going to disagree with Steve on this one. I think trend is really good on a pre-contest diet because it's going to keep your strength high when you're on a low calorie diet and when you're doing lots of cardio. So one example, you know, pre-contest cycle you could run and again, you'd only want to do this 10 weeks because tren is really hard on the body, is I would do 200 milligrams of tren per week, 200 milligrams of Masteron per week, 200 milligrams of test per week, and then you would drop the test, you know, 2 weeks out because test aromatases. And then I would also add in Anavar and Winstrol. Now, I mean, that stack, because you got the Masteron, because you got the Winstrol, because you got the Anavar, you're going to be hard and grainy and dry as nails, but it is super hard on your body. I mean, you have tren, which is just like, it's like pretty much taking a nuclear bomb to your kidneys. And then you got two liver toxic drugs. Then you got, and then you're stacking the three worst steroids for hair loss, tren, Masteron, and Winstrol. So, I mean, that stack will get you the physique you want and you will place very well at your bodybuilding show, but it's going to come with a lot of side effects. So the last thing I'm going to say about tren is that tren, because it's so androgenic, it's horrible for your hairline. It's absolutely horrible. So if you suffer from male pattern baldness, don't touch tren. I would use a good anti-hair loss shampoo. One of the sponsors of the podcast, Need to Build Muscle, they make a really good shampoo called N2 Shampoo and Rogaine. I'd use both of those daily when you're using tren. Just a tip for Rogaine. Rogaine is basically just brand name Medoxidil. You can buy generic Medoxidil spray for way cheaper than Rogaine. Costco sells it. You can also buy it on Amazon. So if you're going to use those two hair loss preventive things, like I mentioned, just buy a generic minoxidil spray. It's the same thing as Rogaine. It'll save you quite a bit of money.
Yeah, I just want to point in, I don't suffer from baldness. I have my hair. But when I ran tren with Winstrol, my hair just started falling out. So that is the worst stack. If my hair is falling out on it, then trust me, most of you guys are going to have major problems. All these YouTube gurus who are bald, who like are fake natties, you can tell they're going heavy on the tren and Winstrol because they're all bald. But I had a question on that Rogaine tren. What's the side effects of that Rogaine?
Nothing. It's topical.
But I mean, what's the drug that's
minoxidil? It's been studied for years and years and years.
How is it working then? Is it doing anything?
It basically blocks the DHT molecules from affecting your hair follicles. So because it's topical and because you apply it directly to your hair, it's not systemic. Like it won't affect DHT conversion or anything like that in your body. It'll just affect your hair follicles. It's very, very effective. It's very safe.
Right. But you use finasteride. How come you didn't just use Rogaine the whole time?
Again, anything topical is not going to be as strong as something that you take, you know, that affects your whole body.
So it's not as strong as finasteride?
No. It might be 20% as strong as finasteride.
It's safer.
Wait, like Rogaine, you get zero side effects whatsoever. Finasteride is better at preventing hair loss, but it comes with a lot of side effects because it actually prevents your body from making DHT, right? Whereas Rogaine is just going to affect your hair follicles.
Okay, that's good. That's a really good tip because you have all your hair. And so what was the reason for you even using finasteride?
Because I'm scared about losing my hair.
Okay.
I'm scared of aging, Steve. I mean, I've been using anti-wrinkle cream since I was 18.
Yeah, that's weird. Okay.
I don't want to get old, man. Okay, so our next topic and our last topic is probiotics. So a couple of really interesting things. Did you know that there are 10 times more probiotics than cells in our body?
I did not know that. That's amazing. You're saying there's 10 million more probiotics than cells?
10 times more. So you have, again, these are rough numbers. It's going to depend on the size of the person, whether they're male or female. But you have roughly 1 trillion cells in your body. You have 10 trillion probiotics in your body. Right.
But I mean, the way we're slinging around antibiotics.
This is for a healthy person. Yeah. So, I mean, someone who's been abusing antibiotics, they would have less than these numbers. And a healthy person will have 3.5 pounds of probiotic bacteria in their intestines.
Yeah, that's 3.5 pounds. Wow. That's a lot.
It's really interesting. Like, you're starting to realize, like, all the new research is showing, you know, like, a healthy digestive flora, it improves body composition, it improves function, like, memory function improves everything. Like, it makes sense. Like, that age-old saying, you are what you eat. Yeah, that's true, but it's you are what you absorb, right? And I mean, if you don't have a healthy digestive flora, it's going to cause an overgrowth of yeast. It's just going to cause so many issues, right? So I really think, you know, in the next 20, 30, 40 years, we're going to be learning more and more about how significant probiotics and the bacteria in our intestines really are.
I just want to say, I know you're going to give us a lot of science here, but let me just say this. I mean, those of you listening, most of you listening have flora problems in your stomach. If you ever go to a public bathroom, it amazes me how long people sit there on the toilet and take a shit. Like, they just sit there for so fucking long. That's not normal, guys. And then their shit smells so fucking bad. That's not normal either. Like, there's no reason for you to sit for a half hour on a fucking toilet reading a fucking magazine. You're supposed to sit there, have your bowel movement, boom, done, no problem, move on. Like, you don't just sit there for 30 minutes. But so many people have so many stomach problems. It has to do with our diet, has to do with our abuse of drugs, antibiotics, all that stuff. Very unhealthy. Crohn's disease is sky high. It's amazing how many people have problems, this gut problems. We're not eating enough foods that we should be eating. We're eating too many foods that we should not be eating. So repairing your gut flora is very important to having a healthy, a healthy digestive system, bowel movements, all that stuff.
Another reason why people are constantly sick, 80% of your immune system is found in your intestines.
So tell us, Trevor, how are people going to – now, Dr. Gary, on our one of our previous podcasts, he brought up some really good tips on repairing gut flora in terms of, you know, some of the things, the kombucha.
So this is raw foods. I've been researching a lot. So the problem with probiotic supplements, like if you buy like a probiotic capsule, is your stomach, Steve, it's acidic, right?
Yeah, it sure is. That's it's going to kill anything that goes in it.
It's going to kill anything that goes in it. Correct. Now, what are probiotics? They're alive bacteria, right?
Yes, sir. Johnny Five is alive.
Okay. So what happens when you take something that's alive and expose it to something very acidic? It kills it. That's why you can use, you know, things like lemon juice, you can use things like vinegar as natural cleaners and natural antibacterials, is because they're so acidic, they kill bacteria. So the problem with when you take a probiotic supplement is, you know, the probiotic supplement will say contains 20 billion cultures or whatever, which is true, but you take that probiotic supplement, it goes into your stomach, and then it's instantly killed by the acidic environment of your stomach. So yeah, it contains those, but you're not actually absorbing any of it. So that's why Dr. Gary emphasized the importance of eating probiotic-rich foods. So, you know, things like sauerkraut, things like properly fermented pickles, things like kombucha. If you're going to take a probiotic supplement, you want to be taking like a whole food probiotic supplement. So the one I found, I don't know if there's anything else quite like it on the market, but it's called Holy Biosa. And Holy Biosa, the nice thing about that is it's buffered at a pH of 3. And since those bacteria cultures are cultivated and grown at that pH of 3, it survives your stomach and then it travels to the final destination of your intestines intact and unaffected, and can actually populate your intestines. So if you're going to buy a probiotic supplement, buy something like Holy Biosa. You want to buy a probiotic supplement that's very, very acidic, so that it basically, those probiotics live through your stomach and then can travel through your intestine undamaged.
And where can they buy that?
You can buy it on, if you're in the US, you can buy it on jet.com. Just Google Holy Biosa and you can
find it. Right, but I mean, isn't it a possibility that you're buying an inferior product when you buy a probiotic online?
No. Holy Biosa is shelf stable, so it doesn't have to be refrigerated. what do you mean, like you're buying an inferior product when you buy it online?
I'm saying you're buying a product that's like underdosed or something like that. Like, no, what is the
Holy Biosa is the brand name of the product.
Okay. That's what
the product's called. So if you, okay, if you Google Holy Biosa, so WHOLYBIOSA, you're buying that specific product, right? It'd kind of be like when we say HC Generate and someone, you know, they can go on NeedToBuildMuscle.com, they can go on Amazon.com. Because they're buying HC Generate, there's no risks of them getting like an underdose product because they're buying a specific product. There might be other products on the market. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's available in the US. Like, I'm located in Canada. Most health food stores here in Canada carry it. Kombucha is similar. That'd be another good option. Or, you know, like a real sauerkraut or real pickles.
Okay. Well, like kombucha, there's so many different kombuchas. Like when I'm at a health food store, how do you know which one to pick?
It'll say on the label how much active bacteria it has. The problem with kombucha is that a lot of them have a lot of sugar added, right? Like, Holy Biosa.
You should look at the label and see how much sugar should be in there.
Like, I mean, I like kombucha, but I don't drink it often just because of the sugar content. And that's why I use the Holy Biosa, because it doesn't have any sugar in it.
Doesn't the Holy Biosa have a sweetener in it? What's it called? A black molasses?
It has a tiny bit of molasses, but one cup has 4 calories.
Okay, so
basically that's like, it has such a minuscule amount of molasses that the bacteria have just enough to eat so that they live. But I mean, the amount in there is like, it's negligible. It's not like kombucha where they add in, you know, like tablespoons of sugar to make it taste good.
Yeah. So guys, it's very important to repair your stomach flora. If you've ever used antibiotics, it's very important to use probiotics to offset that, because the antibiotics are not only killing the bad bacteria, your infection, but they're also killing your good bacteria.
Other really good fermented foods are kefir and yogurt. Now, the problem with kefir and yogurt is generally it's going to be a dairy product. But what you can do is you can buy the kefir and yogurt cultures. You'd have to go to a health food store. And then you can make your own kefir water, or you could add it to like coconut milk. You could add it to almond milk. You could basically make your own yogurt, but you could use whatever milk you wanted. So if you don't want to consume cow's milk, because I know both me and Steve have a real issue with dairy, you could basically buy the bacterial cultures and then make your own yogurt or kefir. A couple places sell kefir water. It's very unpopular, but it's becoming more popular as more and more people have dairy intolerances.
Yeah, I think the whole kefir thing is a scam. Like the whole yogurt kefir thing is just a complete scam. You want to definitely listen to Trevor on this and make sure you're getting the quality probiotics. Don't listen to the stupid commercials. They have like that one actress who does commercials and for yogurt, and she's selling this fucking yogurt with like shitload of sugar in it. That's not going to help you. If that helped you, nobody would have stomach problems, because the amount of dairy we consume is ridiculous.
You know, Activa, how they label like how it's like got like these beneficial bacteria.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
There's a massive lawsuit going on right now, because basically all the claims that they made were not proven.
Well, you know, people are going to still buy it because it's you know, heavily marketed, and, you know, people like the way it tastes. So a lot of people consume yogurt on a daily basis and they still have stomach issues. So go figure.
But like Dr. Gary said, some of the best sources of probiotics are things like sauerkraut, kimchi, pickles. If you can find like real sauerkraut, I know you can buy Bubby's sauerkraut, which is like real authentic sauerkraut. A lot of health food stores carry it. That's awesome.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like regular sauerkraut, but it has a little bit more of a...
Bitter?
No, more like... It tastes more earthy. Like, it's hard to explain. Like, it tastes like more real. It's kind of like when you eat an egg, like a 99-cent Walmart egg, and it kind of tastes like plasticky, and then you eat like a fresh egg from like pasteurized chicken, and it tastes just like more real and more like farm fresh. It's kind of like that difference. It just has more flavor to it. It feels like I can't describe with words, Steve. It's something you have to try.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure you can go on YouTube and read and watch some videos on how to make it.
It's super simple. It's literally cabbage, water, and salt, and then you let it ferment for like a month. I mean, it can't be simpler to make. And like pickles is just cucumbers, water, and salt. And then if you want, you can add things like dill to it. But I mean, like, it's really, really simple. Like, I know the listeners of our podcast are like listening and thinking like, really, Trevor and Steve want me to make my own sauerkraut? Like, that's not realistic. I got a wife and kids and a full-time job. But I mean, we're talking like 10-minute prep time. Like, it's really, really simple. Steve, do you have any final comments?
Do you have a final meal? I really don't.
What?
No, I was just making a joke, like a final meal before they kill you, like the death penalty. They give you a final meal. But I just say, like, guys, it's not normal. If you're taking a dump, like I said, and your shit stinks, like it stinks up the whole house, that's not normal. Like, and if you're like sitting on the toilet for like an hour taking a dump, that's not normal. Like, so you got to get your shit together. It doesn't have to be that
way. This is why it happens. This is why so many people suffer from constipation and so many people have stool movements that reek. They don't have enough beneficial bacteria in their intestines. So what happens is they get an overgrowth of yeast, which is candida, and that's what causes the constipation. And because that fecal matter is sitting there in their intestines for so long, when it finally comes out, it's like rotten and toxic and just horrible. Your poop shouldn't actually smell. A healthy bowel movement should not smell. Listen to the past episodes we did with Dr. Gary, but I mean, if your poop is rancid, that is a real sign that you are struggling with a yeast overgrowth. And the best thing to prevent that and get rid of that is good probiotics. So, you know, get some sauerkraut. You can buy it at the health food store. Try a kombucha. Try the probiotic supplement I recommended. If you're buying a probiotic supplement, just look for something that is buffered at a pH so it survives your stomach and it actually makes it to your intestines. This has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Make sure to check out the Evolutionary Radio YouTube channel for Evolutionary Radio TV. That's a new series that's going to be launching. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, and for my co-host, Steve Smee, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Beep.